response.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
Yo, welcome to another episode of In a Minute with Evan Lovett, live from the IM Studios in the heart of Los Angeles. Today, we have somebody very special. I'm here with Michael Ungaro, the CEO of San Pedro Fish Market, or should I say San Pedro Fish Market? That's for another discussion. The highest volume restaurant in all of California. They also sell more beer than Dodger Stadium. But equally as impressive, the subject of Amazon Prime's Kings of Fish, which is a, what would you say, docudrama?
Yep, docudrama.
That's streaming right now on Amazon Prime. And this thing's compelling. This thing's fun. So I can't wait to get into this discussion with Michael. Michael, thank you for being here.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And before we dive into the interview, I got to give a shout to my sponsor, Culver City Toyota. Thank you so much. They do a great job. And you need to go to Culver City Toyota to get your new or pre-owned Corolla, Prius, Tacoma, whatever it is. George the GM will take care of you. Tell him LA in a Minute sent you. He'll give you $500 in dealer cash. That's Culver City Toyota right there on Washington Boulevard. But now we're going to get into something really good. The interview with Michael Ungaro, the CEO of San Pedro Fish Market. All right, let's get into it. Michael, first of all, thank you for being here.
Great to be here. I have a RAV4 and a Sequoia, by the way.
Do you really?
Yeah.
There you go, Culver City Toyota. There you go. Talk to George.
All righty.
All right. So let me set this up. Michael, you are not just the CEO of probably, look, without putting it in too wild of terms, the most popular restaurant in all of Los Angeles. And I can tell you this, for all the episodes I've done, we've been doing LA in a Minute for 2.5 years, I never received the immediate onslaught of positive comments, likes, oh, I love San Pedro Fish Market. When we went back in June of 2022 to the San Pedro Fish Market, well, we went, you're there.
Yeah.
But I went, and first of all, the place was bustling. This was in the old location, by the way, in the Ports of Call, and we'll get into that story. But first and foremost, most popular restaurant in Los Angeles, largest volume restaurant in California, but it also goes back three generations to 1956, and you are the steward of that LA American dream and responsible for keeping this icon of Los Angeles alive. Address that. Let's start with that.
Oh, well, I've always... It's not a position that I was after or wanted. I think there was a lot of like a more like the reluctant CEO. You know, I kind of grew up with my parents saying, listen, go to school, go to college, don't get stuck here. And I didn't really know what that meant. Okay. You know, I was like, okay, well, I don't like waking up at 5:30 in the morning at age 12 and going into the fish market on a Sunday when all my friends were out the night before.
Yeah.
You know, and so I did do that. I got good grades and I went to college. I had jobs in banking and insurance. I tried to open my own restaurant. I tried a lot of other things. Mm-hmm. A lot of failures, really.
That's how you learn.
Yeah, it really was. And I'd come back and go and come back and go. And at one point, my dad had passed away. And so I had come back to work there when I first got married because I couldn't see a way to earn enough money to buy a house.
What year is this?
So I got married in December 96.
Okay, and just to put some context, and look.
And I'm 26 years old at the time.
Okay. I was going to say you look great for 26.
Thanks, man.
So to put it in context too, and I got to give a little historical background. It's what we do here. And 1956, the market opened blocks from the big location as Vista Seafood, correct?
Vista Seafood, correct.
200 square feet. Mm-hmm. It was Mackie, your grandfather, Ungaro.
Right.
And Amalfitano, yeah. who was the...
Tommy
Amalfitano.
Yeah.
And I always remember that, because when I grew up, by the way, Joe Amalfitano was the pitching coach for the Dodgers. So
lives in San Pedro.
Oh, there you go. And it is, by the way, we talk about this a lot on Ellie in a Minute with Evan Lovett. It is San Pedro. Take it from essentially the king of San Pedro, kings of fish. It is San Pedro. I grew up with Pedro Guerrero. I always thought it was San Pedro, but I was corrected. But even now when I say San Pedro, people are like, no, 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 it's San Pedro. So it is San Pedro.
It's how we know if you're from there or not.
That's
the tell.
So Mackey opens this seafood market, 1956. That eventually turns into the landing. What was the Norm's Landing, correct?
So go back even a step further.
Yeah.
1956, my grandfather's actually a bookie.
Yes.
He was a way to show income, and he gave Tommy, my uncle, and my dad, his best friend, like a choice. You know, I can pay for you to go to school, or you can work. And they didn't like school, so they worked with all their friends. Right. They get out of school, and they go run this little fish market, this little Vista fish market. And I just remember the story that around this time in high school, at a career day, right, and the guy comes, everybody asks the class, what do you want to do when you grow up? And Tommy goes, I want to have the biggest fish market in town. So he was like focused, had this vision, he was working really hard, and that's what he did. So 1959, there was an opportunity in 1959 to go down and take over a place called Norm's Landing, which was on the waterfront. And there was nothing really down there at the time. It was you know, this was like a bait, it was more like a place where like people got bait, but it was also a fish market. And so Tommy and my dad and everybody eventually left Vista, ran Norm's Landing for a long time.
Which was where? Right there where Ports of Call
eventually it would become Ports of Call Village.
And at the time, it was like bait and tackle.
Nothing was there, man. It was like, there was little places. So in 19...
And I think it's important to note, too, just to set background. San Pedro is... I mean, again, Starkist tuna came out of San Pedro because fishing was a very important industry in Los Angeles. And San Pedro is our port area. And Croatian immigrants, Italian immigrants, historic Little Italy is actually in San Pedro. So it has a very rich history, obviously, being on the water and the waterfront and the port as fish. So continue.
So we went down and took over Norm's Landing. And then it was just a constant stream of innovations. Like, they learned how to do smoked fish. They learned how to do live crab and lobster. They were. Tommy told us recently, he was like, we don't even know what's going on because none of us were born. Your grandfather sent me to go work at these different places and learn the industry because we didn't know seafood that way. Wow. So I just was learning and learning and absorbing and learning. And we had a lot of friends in the area. And, you know, your grandfather had a lot of contacts. And so eventually... I think it was in the early 60s, maybe 1965, so a few years later, Ports of Call restaurant was open. Could have been 62. So we'd been there a few years. Then the Talachet family, I'm forgetting the father's name. I just had lunch with the son, John, like a week ago. It was a visionary on building. It was basically kind of the first theme location because Disneyland had just opened.
Yes.
So then you had Ports of Call Village, which was this Tahitian themed, but also sort of, you know, North England sort of like themed.
Wanted to make it village. A destination, right.
And it was a huge hit, and it was next to us, adjacent to us. Okay. But in the 80s, they were expanding, and we were in the way. So Norm's Landing had to go away, and they were expanded the village all the way down to take over this entire piece of property. And it was interesting because I'd heard this rumor that I think is true, that my grandfather could have taken it all over for like $100,000, but he didn't believe anyone was ever going to come down there and want to come to the waterfront. Like, he didn't share that kind of a vision, you know. And my uncle was like, please, 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 please. And he's like, nah. So instead, what happened was we got this eviction notice. They're going to kick us out. And my uncle was this huge proponent around, we just need to expand. We need to use our contacts. Yeah. We can make this work. And so we were able to secure the rights to a piece of property, and the village actually got built around us.
Okay.
And so what that piece of property became is we had to leave. We had to work out of a parking lot.
Yeah.
We had to do that for about a year, year and a half. And then in 1980, on Good Friday, we opened San Pedro Fish Market.
Wow.
And the Ports of Call Village expansion actually opened a copycat restaurant called Krusty Krab to compete with us. And I think what the story was is like, why don't, you know, Talish is like, just, we'll build you something, take it over, and you can do that. And my grandfather's like, no, we're going to do it our own way. And he goes, well, it's your call. And so we did. And what set us apart from all the other... wasn't that it wasn't a smart move, but a lot of the income from the village was boat slips, but they blocked the view. Yeah. And the way the village was built, there wasn't any place you can go where you can actually sit on the water and see things. Whereas our entire concept was built to be waterfront.
Right.
So you can get your seafood and you can sit on the water and enjoy it. Now, a lot of people know this. 1982 that we opened. That Good Friday, that year was the last time we had a major El Nino. Like, I think it was one of the worst we'd ever had.
82, 83, and in fact, I was just doing a story on this. There were tornadoes in Los Angeles in 1983, including one that damaged the LA Convention Center.
Yeah.
So that is very interesting.
The whole family mortgages all their homes to open a location with 300 seats outside, and it rained the whole summer.
Oof.
So nothing will
not force, an auspicious beginning. Yeah,
nothing will force you to innovate more than the threat of your very existence.
Yeah.
So my uncle was very innovative, right? And what he did was he started looking, what are other people doing? How do we make this work? And he had this idea, well, maybe we can cook the fish.
Okay.
And he found, like, I think literally found it in a junkyard, these rendering tanks that farms had discarded. Like, you're tearing down a steer.
Because at the time, people were just buying fish, smoked fish, different kinds of like prepared or raw.
Even more interesting, and I didn't think about this till he just told me this like a few months ago. He goes, well, at the time, Mike, you have to understand, McDonald's popped up, Jack in the Box. Oh, people stopped buying fish and food and going home to cook because they could drive through and get it on their way.
Absolutely.
So we were trying to figure out how to compete with that. So we had a walk-up counter where you could buy stuff. Mm-hmm. And the dining room was actually going to be fast casual, even though that term hadn't been invented.
Correct.
But it was based on what he saw at Sizzler. If you remember the old Sizzlers, you walk up and order and they bring the food to you.
Yes.
So I thought about it. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's how that dining room area was designed. And you had the walk-up counters because no one was buying fish to take home.
Right.
Because they were going to that and it wasn't enough to sustain us. So he said, I had to figure something out. And I thought we didn't have any money. So we got these old tanks and I ran a gas line and put some mesquite in there.
Yeah.
And for $1, we'll barbecue your fish.
Wow.
And then he goes, I went down to this Mexican restaurant, El Paso Cantina, if you remember that.
No,
and later on became Acapulco's.
I'm glad you ref that. Okay.
And he said, you know, they're doing this thing called fajitas. They're doing them with chicken and they're doing it with steak. And we could do that with shrimp and fish.
Yeah.
So he goes, I'm going to put a couple grills on the weekend. I'm going to send some to LA, buy bell pepper, tomato, onion. Wow. We'll chop it up and I'll buy an industrial machine to cut them up. And we'll mix it, we'll make up our own seasoning, and we'll just do this like shrimp fajita thing and fish fajita thing.
Okay.
And then he goes, we'll add tortillas. You know, there's a local baker, we can get garlic bread, and just evolve. And he goes, you'll do like the East Coast, we'll get potatoes. I built this whole steam tank section. We'll put the red potatoes in there, we'll steam them, we'll put them in the walk-in, which is big enough to drive a forklift through, so there's space.
Yes.
Chill the potatoes, chop them up, mix them with the seasoning, and we'll create these seafood trays. And they were a hit. But he innovated all these things, just throwing things against the wall to see what would stick, testing things out, looking what was popular other ways, and then bringing it in and adapting it to what we did.
Hey, y'all. Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze. Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, that's a great origin story for the seafood tray itself, because that's kind of what made you guys, right?
Yeah,
and what you guys are most known for.
Yeah.
And I remember, listen, so I go down there. Again, this is probably June 2022.
It's probably 21 because I think 22 we were.
No, I started in 22. I started in 22.
Wow, so
yeah, and it was bustling.
Oh, that's right, because this is 24.
COVID and all that stuff.
22.
But like,
that's right.
It was bustling, and I go down there, and
I remember
the lines in the crowd, and the cool thing again about the San Pedro Fish Market is, I'm not somebody who likes crowds. I don't like waiting. I don't like lines. But it becomes something different than the typical restaurant that you're waiting at. There's really an atmosphere and you're entering a party. You know what I mean? Like it feels like it's this, people are anticipating their waiting line, but the music's going, there's so much beer, everybody's like drinking all this stuff, but you see the fish and you smell the atmosphere and being there on the water. So it's almost like, look, I don't like crowds, I don't like lines, but I love being there. And then it all culminates when you get the seafood tray, and I remember you bust this thing out for me, dude. And I was like, oh my God, every kind of fish, the potatoes, the tomato, the peppers, like all this kind of stuff. And that's where you guys, so it comes from, a necessity. Yeah. The fact that you needed to have to keep the place open because of the El Nino.
And then we just kept testing new things. You know, it's like people like, well, can I bring my own fish in?
Yeah.
Or can I pick a different kind of fish? So we're like, I guess that works, because if you went to this fish counter, picked out your own fish, and we cooked it that way, that means we can create a new revenue stream from the and actually move fish out of the showcase.
Wow.
So then we built another kitchen. And then there were some people that weren't happy with the crowds we were bringing in, the noise, and they kept calling, call the police, call the fire.
Wow.
And you say, one time we got a ticket because people were dancing on a table to the music and we didn't have a cabaret license.
Perfect. There you go.
So it's like, come on. Man, so and so eventually we just kept evolving. The kitchens and stuff that we were doing, they weren't always totally licensed, so at one point we got shut down. So what happens when you get shut down? You can't do these, you don't have licenses, because people complain so much. Okay, fine, we'll just we'll make them all licensed. And so what happened was, people that were unhappy with the crowds we were bringing in and the things that we were doing forced us to improve what we were doing, and we became 10 times busier because of the capacity increased by legalizing things. This is like going back to like the early 90s.
Let's talk about that capacity for a second. Yeah. So what at that that location that made San Pedro Fish Market, mm-hmm. what was the capacity?
The original one, when we rebuilt in 82, was 300 seats. When we left that building in 20, so it would have been 23 then, right?
Yeah.
24. Yeah. We had grown to 3,000 seats, because we took over Krusty Krab, which was the competitors. And we combined those seats, and we kept pushing the deck out as far as the Army Corps of Engineers would allow us over the water.
Yeah.
And we had about seating capacity for about 3,000, and we were doing about 2 million customers a year.
2 million customers a year, which made it the second most visited seaside attraction in all of California behind SeaWorld.
Yeah.
So think about this. And we're talking SeaWorld in its prime, by the way, when they had Shamu and all this kind of stuff, when it was a big deal, where if you were going to San Diego, you were going to SeaWorld. That's a lot of people. Right now, Universal Studios is 2.5 million people per year. And Universal Studios is considered a premier theme park. So think about that. And again, I need to reiterate, when you go, that deck that you're talking about, it was huge. Everybody's smiling. There's the noise. There's the atmosphere. The
big
food.
Party.
Yeah, it's literally a party. So it was awesome. And at what point were you there yet when you got in? What point are you like, this is something that sort of is a destination in LA? It's not just a restaurant. It's not just a place. Oh, honey, where are we going to go on date night? No, this is a destination. You get a group. You get your friends. Yeah. You celebrate. When did that start becoming the case for LA?
You know, if you're going through our 60, 68, whatever years history, and you start to analyze, you realize what our family was doing was changing what we offered as the demographics changed. So there was this point where we had, you know, a lot of white American, we had a Croatian. I remember we had a Vietnamese customer base for a long time, Filipino customer base. The Latino customer base really dominated everything in the 80s.
Yeah.
And super loyal demographic and just great people in general, right? Like every one of my two brothers, my sister, every one of us were involved with a Latino. My wife's last name's Romero. You know, John and Henry's wives are Latina.
Married to a Mexican.
Right.
I mean, always like, say that all the kids we grew up with, I don't know if this is the right term, but biracial couple. Like everywhere like that. It's LA. Like, let's call it what it is.
I was dating my wife, and she came over to my parents' house. And this is 26, 27 years ago. And there's this picture on my mom's refrigerator, and it's in the crab tank. Four guys working in the crab tank, and they're teenagers.
Yeah.
And it's like my best friend at the time, who's a good friend of mine still, a couple other guys I knew. And she goes, oh, that boy's so cute. I would always go, oh, yeah, that's my friend. Every girl would come in, and he'd get phone numbers every day. She goes, no, not him. That guy was arrogant and stuck up. It's the guy next to him. The skinny guy with the afro, that's me. Why didn't you ever say hi?
Wow. Wait, so you had an afro?
No. Well, it was pretty curly.
Right, dude. Okay.
It was just naturally Italian curl. So, and then my brothers all had a similar story with their wives.
Yeah.
Somehow it all linked back to the business in a weird way.
So great. Because it is one of those, it's a nexus for Los Angeles. And that's the importance of the fish market. And I don't want to skip ahead, but I think it's important to realize you guys... That location evolved, right?
Yeah.
Because in 2023, what happened with the port that sort of forced your hand, where now you're at the landing, a renewed area, fresh energy, still a couple hundred yards away, right down there. But it's a different location now. Tell me about that and the evolution of what happened,
so,
how that evolved.
For about 12 or 13 years now, there's been a move to redevelop the waterfront. You know, people were there was a bidding process, people were chosen, it was moving forward. Originally, it wasn't clear that we were going to be part of it. So I was like, you know why? Nobody knows who we are, what we do. We're so head down, butt up. When I started searching around, because social media is getting big at this time, right? 12 years ago, 10 years ago. And you start to see in blogs, and you start to read about what people thought about us. And they thought we were like a swap meet. And every stand, because we had to build all these kitchens to keep up with demand, thought they were just like, we were just renting space out. And there's a place, I guess, in Ensenada called the Mercado Negro, or the black market for seafood.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's a seafood swap meet in Ensenada.
Right.
So people are like, this is my second place behind Ensenada to go for seafood. I'm like, well, we're not telling our story. We're not controlling the narrative.
Right, right.
So, and Facebook happened to show up.
Yeah.
So I'm like, we could do it here. So I started using Facebook, and then we had this Instagram thing. It popped up where we were like top 10 most Instagram restaurants.
Yes.
Right? Like 3 years.
Oh,
in a row.
That's right.
And then
right.
we started producing our website.
Hold on, that's important to mention, by the way. This was a top 10 Instagram restaurant in the United States. Again, it's important to reinforce just how important San Pedro Fish Market is to Los Angeles. And even in the scheme of nationwide, it becomes that destination. And in no small part due to the fact that it's in San Pedro, which is such a hidden gem that I always talk about on In a Minute with Evan Lovett and LA in a Minute. But it really is a destination for, of course, for locals, but for out-of-towners as well. But going back.
I realize now, thinking on it, that we had an unfair advantage, because the way Instagram was measuring it, and I think why they stopped, was this was based on people, customers, geotagging themselves. And nobody else had 3,000 seats. So the numbers just pushed us to the top, because everyone's geotagging and taking pictures of these giant seafood trays.
Yeah.
So it was like Perch in LA, it was Cafe Du Monde. I think Cat's Deli, I think it was Cafe Du Monde was one, Cat's Deli was two, and we were like five.
Yes.
And, you know, and donut places, Voodoo Donuts, or some other places on there too.
It's, again, not a surprise, because the loyalty to San Pedro Fish Market is intense and is beyond everything. So you're, tell me though about the social media ride, because I always say this. I feel social media, maybe the internet as a whole, but it's the greatest invention of modern times.
It's the worst.
And the worst. Yeah. And the worst, right? But in your case, so you rode that wave. You understood the power of it, early adopter, if you will. I don't love terms like that. But you were an early adopter.
Well, I realized that they're not sure that they're going to include us, because we've become replaceable. So I'm going to use social media and develop our brand and make us irreplaceable.
Right.
So then we were offered, eventually what that turned into is two things happened. Our sales started to go way up.
Yeah.
Like, we started seeing double digit sales growth annually because the word was spreading and people were seeing this. And I don't know, you know the guys at Food Beast, you ever meet them?
I was going to bring that up. Absolutely. Yeah. I work with them on certain stuff.
Yeah. So they reached out to us and we started.
2017, right?
Yeah. So when we started doing our series originally, it was just 5-minute episodes, Kings of Fish, right? It was just going to be Facebook, because that's where our followership was. And we made a deal, like, we'll give you the first 4 episodes, because we went to eyeballs. They had like over 1 million eyeballs. Wow. And they were creating series of their own.
Absolutely.
And I think they realized, well, we should do a little bit more than that. So they came and did a video. And they're like, what do you serve here? Is like a lot of cheese or something? I go, no, dude, come on. So there was this obscure menu that I'd never noticed on one of the kitchens, that like temporary kitchens we opened. And it had this little thing on there called a super tray.
Okay.
And he goes, well, what's a super tray? I go, I've never seen that before. I don't know. I'll make you a super tray. I don't know what it is, but I'll make you something.
I think
super.
You made me a super tray. Yeah, right, so I made this
big tray of seafood, and they filmed it. And they had, like, at the time, they were doing like Twitter Live, they were doing Instagram, Facebook.
Food Beast was running the game. They're still big, but they were running the game in the mid 2010s. But go on.
That video they created, the Super Tray video, came out a week later. I wasn't even in town.
Okay.
I think I was either at the Boston Seafood Show or looking at colleges with my daughter, one of the two. And the Port Police, right, Port Los Angeles Police Department calls me and goes, what are you doing? I go, what do you mean? I'm out of town. There's so many people coming in right now, we don't have the manpower to police the freeways. We're going to have to close an off ramp.
Yeah.
I'm like, but I thought it was raining. He goes, exactly. It doesn't make sense. And like, this video went viral. It ended up dropping off at about 55 million views. And 30,000 customers came in like 10 days from all over the country, just flying in from almost every state. We're trying to track it, looking for a super tray that nobody knew what it was. None of the employees knew what it was or how to make it or anything. And that was like, to me, that was a game changer. I'm like, okay, publishing our own content, controlling our social media, and teaming up with companies that have these followerships. That's how we stay relevant. And that's what happened.
Do you have a dark curiosity? Follow and listen to Heart Starts Pounding on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so I got to use that as a segue. We need to talk about Kings of Fish, which again now is on Amazon Prime. It's streaming, it's entertaining, it's fun, and it's real. I met these guys, and that's the best part. You know, it's got that like kind of reality show, not reality, so that's unfair. It's
it's a good point.
It has real people, real characters, but they are real, and I met them, and like they're good folks over there. But that came about 2016, 2017?
Yeah. 2017, I think, was when the first... Don't 2016?
And it was your vision, or it was like a spinoff of the Food Beast? How did that come about?
We did it before Food Beast, but I was studying for a long time business philosophy and the like the power of narratives and storytelling.
Yeah.
And I'm like, we're not telling our story. That's the most valuable asset we have is a story that no one's telling. Right. No one's talking about it. So when the first thing we had done was we set 3 Guinness World Records in a single day when we used to do this annual Lobster Fest. And these guys that own Citizen Jones, they're a production company, do some TV shows. They had done something with us and said, we want to come out. We heard you're doing these Guinness World Records. We want to film it. And they turned it into a sizzle reel and they shopped it around and they called it Fishmongers. It was really cool. Okay. It was freaking cool. And they're good dudes.
Wait. Tell us about the Guinness World Records first.
We used to do the largest lobster fest in the world. Right. We weren't producing the festival. We just did the lobsters. It was a music festival too. Like Jason Mraz used to play there, and Dave Wakeling and X. I mean, it was a big music festival, and the draw was these lobsters, right? So, no one was dumb enough to put their neck on the hook for 30,000 lobsters, 30,000 pounds of lobster. But we knew that if we didn't sell them the festival, we could sell them through the restaurant. So. The producer, Jim Hall, at the time was producing this festival. He goes, I'm going to get Guinness to come out. And we set a record first. I think it was 2008. And they wouldn't let us put lobster on it. So it was like most seafood served in a single day. And it was over an 8-hour period or something like that. And I think it was 17,000 pounds. I forget. Woo. So somebody in another country didn't beat us with sardines. Or mackerel or something.
Wow.
And so we went back.
Was that bait? Who was
it was like Argentina, like maybe, or Costa Rica. Yeah, or I forget. But on, like, this doesn't make sense, dude. Right, so it's not fair. So we went back and we negotiated, like, if you let us put lobster, and we think we can do 3 in a day. Most served, most cooked, and most, like, it was most cooked, most served, and most in a single vessel.
Yeah.
And we hit all 3 of them. These guys filmed it, packaged it, shopped it around to every network. And it was awesome. But
and
no,
this is the
it.
Truth. You see, Michael, it is a bunch of characters too. Like look, correct me if I'm wrong. To work in a fish market, much less the San Pedro fish market, you gotta have a certain mentality. You're not the shirt and tie cubicle kind of person. Yeah. So everybody has like a fun personality or a gruff or whatever. Like a very entertaining personality. I do want to know, and I don't want to get bogged down in this, but I'm just curious. When they do a Guinness World Record, what is the certification process? How does that actually work?
So both times, so these are two different ones. We did one and the other one we did 3. They send out an adjunctator, I think is the term, to be there and watch everything.
Yeah.
And then when we're doing weights, you had to have a certified scale and somebody else.
For each serving. Well, like
they want to make sure we're just making it up. Yeah, so it's got to all be recorded. And so we had to do all that and hire those people and it all got, I mean, then we're in the book. Wow. That's pretty cool.
That is very cool. So the Guinness Book of World Records, they package it. It's a sizzle reel, shopping it around. What happened?
So
Citizen Jones.
Citizen Jones, right? Jonah and Jonas. Really good guys. I think what happened was it looked a lot like Duck Dynasty with fish, which is fine. You know, I mean, it was a great marketing piece.
That's always how you sell it.
But I think what happened was Duck Dynasty had some bad press at that same exact time. And I don't think anyone wanted to touch it. I think that was part of it. But they were cool and like, we don't know what to do with it. You can use it if you want. And I'm like, cool. Because at the time I had a packaged frozen meal product based on our shrimp trays that I was selling. And we were in about 6,000 stores. And HEB was interested, which is a big chain in Texas. Yep. And I go, well, they're not going to know who we are, but if you let me, I'll bring the sizzle reel and I'll show it to them. Okay. And so HEB looks at the sizzle reel and they're like, oh, this is like Duck Dynasty. We'll buy it. I go, no, it's not a TV show. It's just marketing piece. Okay, but what channel is it going to be? No, there's nothing. I don't have anything else.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll buy it. Just let me know when it's on TV. But there's no, and they couldn't hear because they did such a great job that it looked like a TV show.
That's awesome.
So I went back and they bought all the stuff and it didn't sell because I had no other marketing behind it. you know? And I was like, well, this is a problem. So we started thinking, well, let's, maybe we can just make this thing on our own. And I started reaching out to people. I actually reached, you know, Barry Katz is, he's like Jay Moore's manager. He's got the industry standard is this podcast.
All right.
I reached out to him randomly. He had a couple meetings with him. He gave me all these pointers, but it's like, I still don't know how to do this.
Yes.
Like, I don't know where to get the money and how to pay for it because it's really expensive.
Or putting it together for that.
Yeah,
matter.
I knew we had the story, but I didn't know how to do the rest of it. And then a friend of mine that has a bunch of background in TV, and he's actually on our marketing team now, is a really good buddy of mine named Scott Holmes. Okay. Scott goes, I know these guys, and we ended up getting together with Tim Wasmuth is his name. And okay. Tim's an editor, does Below Deck, he does, Bar Rescue,
but he's an editor. It's just meetings, and you're like, meet this guy, let's see what people can conceptualize and come up with.
And Tim we really liked, and Tim's like, you know, I'm worried the whole industry is going digital, and I'm going to be out of a job.
Okay.
You know, so I want to look at some other ways to work here. And he goes, as an editor, and I didn't understand this at the time, they give me all this stuff, and I have to figure out how to make a show, and all I could think of is, if I was there, I would have captured this, this, and this.
Yes.
So he goes, I'm going to come in and capture the things that I need as an editor, and then I can go back and actually make it, and you'll be my first project. So we teamed up with him and helped him kind of, like, basically our project helped him get his company started.
Wow.
And that's the first four episodes, and then we just continued working with
him. Where were those aired? How did that work?
All that stuff was ours, social media. We paid for all of it. We had a hard time finding sponsors. The closest we came to a sponsor was when Corona went into kegs.
Yeah.
But, you know, Corona can't give a customer money. They can give you, like, bottle caps. Like, it has to be less than 25 cents. So I'm like, okay, well, forget that we're a customer. I'll start a new company.
Yeah.
You know, KOF LLC, Kings of Fish.
Yeah.
And you can pay them. They'll be the marketing company. And it wasn't a lot of money. It was a few thousand dollars.
Yeah.
It wasn't enough. It was a fraction of what we needed to do it.
Right.
But we knew there was a market to do this now. So we tested that out. And we just, you know, we just wasn't going anywhere. I think the family was getting frustrated. Like, I'm tired of being in front of the camera. I don't know why we're doing this. And nobody was getting a check that said, thank you for King. Here's my check for Kings of Fish. And it was hard to connect. Like, yeah, but look at the sales are going up. We're breaking records. And I don't know, maybe. And so we were ready to shelf it. Then we did then the pandemic happened, right? And so we did a whole, and I actually have wiped this out of my memory, but we did a whole pandemic season about what it was like to deal with COVID. And so I don't like looking at it, but I've been told now by people in the industry, see, the restaurant industry, you might be the only person to actually capture what we were going through. Like, you captured what it was like. I'm like, I did? I had to go back and watch some of it. But then, you know, we lost people to COVID. You know, we lost two family members that were owners.
One of the Malfitanos, right?
Brother and sister. We lost both of them. So we were, you know, at that point, we're like, I don't even want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
And we were pretty close because this distributor came to us and said, I've got some connections through Amazon and Pepsi. We had just switched to Pepsi for a bunch of different reasons. And they'll pay a significant amount of money to make a whole season, but 20-minute episodes, like an actual season.
Yeah.
And that'll be on Amazon. We're like, okay, let's do it. But then Tommy Jr. passed away.
Right.
Sister passed away, both from COVID, and we weren't really sure what to do. And we sat down with the family and said, look, there's this opportunity to do a season. I'm not comfortable with it because I feel...
You said this.
Yeah, like
you
all of us kind of went in a room and said the same thing. And we met with Tommy Jr.'s kids.
And how long had you been doing this show, though? Like,
in- So this is like 20... I'm going to say this is 2021
when
we had this meeting. Late 2021, maybe 2022. And Tommy had already passed away to his sister, right? So it's still in the whole COVID mess.
Right.
And, you know, they want us to do this. They're willing to give us money for it. None of us are really comfortable, and I don't think anybody wants to do it. Yeah. However, Tim was there, and Tim's crying. You know, he goes, I was really close with your dad to the kids, you know, fourth generation. What we could do, if you're open to it, we can make the season, and it'll memorialize him. And I thought about that for a second because he died at, I think he was 55 when he passed away. My dad was 56. So I'm looking at these kids going, I know what they're going through.
Yeah.
And I got a few pictures. I don't have a TV series.
Yeah,
that my dad
was 66, which, you know, I thought I was young.
Yeah, but I'm like, you guys have a TV series of your dad. Like, you can watch it anytime, and he's being himself. Like, this is who he really was. It's really authentic. And what Tim was getting at is we can memorialize him in this last season, and it'll be that. And if it goes to Amazon, cool. If it doesn't, we'll deal with that later. And we thought about it, and everyone's crying. You know, it's sad. And like, let's do it. So that's what we did.
Wow.
You know, we made the season. And then back to your original question, which we skipped over, is, so how'd you get evicted?
Yes.
So So all this social media stuff and branding stuff worked, and the developers had offered us to be the anchor tenant.
Yeah.
The problem we were having was we had grown so big that the space that they were designing for us, we didn't have a lot of input into it because we weren't really sure what, like, how it was going to work. And then we thought, I think we outgrew what you're designing. Wow. And so we kind of hit this impasse.
Hold on. Yeah. I got to back up a little because this is equivalent. I don't want to over-dramatize it.
Yeah.
But it's not quite like moving Dodger Stadium, but it's a little bit like the Lakers leaving the Forum to go to what was the Staples Center, because you're asking San Pedro Fish Market to move. Again, the context.
Yeah.
2 million plus people per year. This wasn't like, oh, the H&M needs to relocate or whatever, or such and such, you know, restaurant. Like, this is really a stalwart. This is a true destination of Los Angeles, and you're kind of getting the not even pushback. You're getting a mandate, right? That you need to relocate.
I mean, there was places where there could have been a fight. I don't think the fight would have been worth it, and I don't think it would have ultimately had a good outcome.
And what's the vision? Because in all fairness, San Pedro is doing what?
We're looking at this, and we realize that we have outgrown the capacity of what this building could do. The building had good bones, and it could have lasted a long time. We probably could have modified it, but there was a vision to do it for a walkway. We're in the way of that. There's a vision to do this. We might be in the way of that. We don't. So we were basically, I think, at least the third generation, like me and my brothers, like, yeah, we got to rebuild it. And we started meeting with people, and we're doing plans, and we're trying to come up with, if you could maximize the capacity here, what would you do? And so we were on board to do that, but their timeline and our timeline weren't, they had to get stuff done faster than we were moving. Yeah. So they were like, we have to design this stuff. If you guys aren't on board, we're going to design something. You have to figure out how to get into it. And we're like, we can't get into it. Like, what you built's probably not going to work for us. Yeah. So we're like, well, can we just build our own? Like, that doesn't work with our plan. So the port's like, the port stepped in and said, well, we got to keep things peaceful. So we think we can move you over down by the Catalina terminal where the bridge is. Okay. There's space there. I'm like, cool, let's do that. So we don't want to get in your way. We don't want to hold up your project. We don't want to create something that isn't going to work. Yeah. So we can, that's ground. We can build what we need ground up.
Right.
And then we ran into all the environmental this and that and the other stuff. And so we could not get the momentum we needed to move over there. So then they said, well, you'll probably need to open a temporary location.
Okay.
There's a bus terminal over by the cruise ship. We can open in the bus terminal parking lot. I don't know where the buses are going to go, but let's start to plan for that. So we put a team together, and we start talking to vendors because we're trying to get out of the way.
Yeah.
And now this is not, it's not moving the way it needs to move. So they came up to us, and now we're in November of 2022.
Okay.
A few months after we met.
Yeah.
And they're like, listen, just so you know, you're going to get an eviction notice because things are moving along. They got their financing. They're going to get, okay, but I've heard this 6 times. So I need to know because I've been on a month-to-month lease for a long time and I got a bunch of people. And so one of the backup plans I had, by the way, was there was Long Beach, the other location in Long Beach, which was Joe's Crab Shack. They were in bankruptcy, and we reached out and we were able to take over this Joe's Crab Shack. But it was only 470 seats. Not 3,000.
Yeah.
So at the worst, we can put some people here. We can try to expand in Wilmington. There's some things we could do. And then if we can get a parking lot for this temp location, that might keep us sustainable until we can build permanent.
Right.
So all that was going on. The eviction notice goes down. Henry and I reach out. They're like, listen, it is what it is. We're not going to fight it. We just need to know if there's a place that we can coexist together.
Yeah.
And there's a little pushback at first, but eventually, like, well, there's this parking lot. It's 100 yards away. I'm like, parking lot. And we had brought up the parking lot first. I'm like, you know, we think we could set up in this parking lot. We've done it before. We were 11, but I think we could do it. You know?
And that was foreshadowing earlier when he was talking about Good Friday and all that. Exactly. Yep. Any parking lot. Yep. Go on. Right.
So they said, we worked out the deal with the parking lot. You can go in there and set up shop. And I said, let's call it the Landing because we're throwing back to Norm's Landing when we got evicted last time.
That's the heritage, baby. Right.
So that's what we did, and our teams were incredible. And in 60 days, they got temporary kitchens, we got temporary bathrooms, power, and it was fully functioning.
And just to put in perspective, it's funny, for most businesses, like most restaurants, you couldn't move Spago to a parking lot, right? Yeah. You couldn't move John and Vinny's to a parking lot. It wouldn't be the same.
Yeah.
But again, with the outdoor vibe on the port, it's kind of like a natural transition. Maybe it wasn't ideal, wasn't like premeditated, but you're like, you know what? The vibe isn't like that.
We had to figure out, like, what are people coming here for? Like, what can we take and just simplify into this parking lot temporarily? Because it was only supposed to be really 6 months. And so, like, they're coming for the seafood, they're coming for the beer, they're coming to sit with their families, and they want the view. We can do all that stuff. Yep. We can't get the live crab and lobster. We're working on that right now. We might not have the fish market component, but it's the same live, same fresh seafood. We'll just bring it from our Wilmington location, which is 5 minutes away, 10 minutes away, and we'll send it over. And so scan a QR code, pick your favorite dish, we'll run it to the table. So here's what happened that was interesting, and I didn't anticipate this, but I was hoping for that something like this would happen, was our customers were traveling at the point of our eviction, 100 miles was the concentration. So we're a tourist attraction now. We're no longer a restaurant.
Correct.
And we have people from
I know people that come from Phoenix, Downey, they come from Montebello. I'm just saying within LA, right?
Yeah,
the Valley, which by the way, the Valley to San Pedro is a trek, but a worthwhile trek. But go
also Phoenix and Las Vegas for the day to go back home.
Yeah.
So they're going to come anyways. We can't shut the spigot off.
Correct.
So they come in and they would stand, they'd have to park a mile away. They have to wait the hour-long line you saw. And then they get in and they got to wait in six different lines to get their food. Well, now we're eliminating all that. They just have to park and walk in, sit at a table, and we'll run it all to them. So while they're waiting for food, they can order another round of beer, another round of beer, another round of sodas, whatever. And it made us way more efficient in ways we couldn't do before. It made the customers a lot happier because they didn't have to do as much work, but they still had the same experience.
Yeah.
So we went from 2 million customers to like 500,000.
Right.
Because we didn't have as many seats.
Yep.
And there wasn't a lot of parking till now because they were building parking. So we made it work. It's lasting longer because do you want to know what we're doing next?
Of course, I want to know what you're doing next.
So the idea was we'll go into this parking lot temporarily until we can build something more substantial that could last a few years until we rebuild where we were. And that was supposed to take 6 months. Everything's built, ready to be installed. But it's just, you know, when you're dealing with the city, there's no box to check.
Right.
What do you mean parking lot? What do you mean temporary for 3 years? It's 90 days. And so we're like, we tried to submit. We finally realized, okay, this is just basically going to be a new restaurant. Okay. It's going to be a three-year restaurant, but it's going to be a new restaurant. So we had to redesign, rebuild, resubmit, and we're in that process right now. And the city officials have been great. Like our new councilman, Tim McCosker, is really helping push things through.
The 1-5. Shout out to Tim McCosker, by the way. Look, I like all of our council people. Pat myself on the back for a sec. LA in a Minute was honored by the city council.
Nice.
So I cannot, disparage anybody, and I love them all equally, but Tim McCosker of the 1-5 is a very positive spirit.
He's a good dude.
I like his energy. I just like what he's doing for, again, kind of an overlooked district. Again, there, I want to say 15 council districts or 13 council districts 15, in Los Angeles. You're 15, obviously the 1-5. But you know, Wilmington, Watts, San Pedro, like it's kind of areas that the harbor cities, like they get overlooked, but he's really putting it out there, good energy. So anyway, shout out
McCosker. And also Janice Hahn too, our LA County supervisor, because she's health department, right? So you have all these agencies like, we need some help because what we're trying to, we're trying to save all these jobs. We had 300 employees at one point, and I think we're about we're pretty close to 300 right now. But, you know, you can't employ all these people when you're shrunk down like that.
No.
So they were helpful in placing them in the new jobs, making sure people got the assistance they needed. I mean, they've been fantastic and helping us to tell the story of, I know there's no box to check. Can we just draw one? Because it's a restaurant. So so that's all working out really well now. The plan is within, hopefully by the end of the year at this point, because we're now a year behind schedule because it's a challenging project, we're going to be opening what we're going to be calling phase two of the landing.
Okay.
And what phase two is going to have is about 1,800 seats. It's right on the water.
Right.
It's going to have a 4,000 square foot temporary kitchen facility that can sit there for 3-5 years or longer if we needed to.
Awesome.
But the seating, the bathrooms, it's all going to be like pretty incredible what we're building. And it will function for as long as it takes for us to reopen where we left. And you're the first to hear this because it hasn't been publicized. Hopefully by the time this goes live, everyone will know about it. I don't know, but I just signed a 49-year LOI.
Wow.
For what will become our new legacy location, which will be the rebirth of San Pedro Fish Market.
Do you hear that? Yeah. In a Minute with Evan Lovett exclusive, the rebirth of San Pedro Fish Market. 49-year lease. What did that feel like signing? If I sign a 1-year contract, I get a little nervous. So lease 3 years, I'm like, so I don't know.
Interesting part, because it's going to be on 55,000 square feet, which is what we had before, and probably about 20,000 square foot building, and it'll be all state of the art, brand new stuff. And it's going to, and we've hired a company called Studios, and Studios is a big architectural firm. They're doing all the Italy's right now.
Yeah,
if you ever been to Italy, they did the one here in Culver City.
I was just in Westfield Century City.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, they just did that one. I was just there too, taking a look at it. And we went to tour the ones they've done in New York a couple weeks ago. Okay. They're incredible. So they're working on the new concept, which will be our brand.
Wow.
And so the brand will say, these are the components that make up a San Pedro Fish Market. And then when we go in to build legacy, they'll adjust it based on the size. And then the other announcement that may or may not be public, because I haven't signed it yet, but we're negotiating to open a location on the Monterey Wharf, Fisherman's Wharf in Monterey. Really? I've been working with the city for about 2 years. So it's 99% done. We just haven't assigned an official lease yet.
I don't want to spend too much time on it because it's not done. But how would you, Michael Ungaro, split your time yourself? I've always wondered this with restaurants to expand. Met with Norm Langer of Langer's, and he was like, they wanted me to move the Valley, but I can't be at both locations. Yeah. And it is true. Like you have a great team. Great staff. I met a lot of people, but you can't be at both and ensure the highest quality.
When we met, we had a great team for one or two locations.
Right.
And so what we've done since then, probably starting about that time, is building people that had a lot of experience with multiple locations that fit in with our core values and our family.
Yeah.
And moving people around, like my brother Henry now runs our business expansion or business development team, which is basically just designed to find these locations and figure out how to build them. Ooh. And then our COO, Greg Rinaldi, who's like a former professional baseball player, and he's worked in Ruth Chris, and he's worked at Del Frisco's, and he's worked at all these big chains, multi-location chains.
Yeah.
He's helping us develop the systems and bringing in people to put in place, because that is going to be a challenge. You know, we were okay with a 2-hour drive, but that's a six to seven hour drive.
It's a different story. So,
but it'll take about 2 years to open, to be honest, because the city's got about 8 months of work to do on this building, and it's in an existing 17,000 square foot building. It used to be called Scales, and it's 2-story. It's a beautiful spot, but it'll take us some time to plug in what Studios is designing into that space. So we'll have to go up there and look at it with them, but it's really fun. You know, we're reinventing what we did for the next two generations.
Exciting. Okay, two things. One, you are the third generation. Important, again, Los Angeles legacy business. We all know LA is the city of transplants. Somebody's an LA native, it's almost like a novelty, even still, even though you know we're more ingrained in the culture. But your third generation business, what's going to happen with the fourth generation?
Hey, can I back up and tell you a story real quick?
Of course.
I'm going to get to this because this is a big question.
Yeah.
I remember the other day that when my mom's family moved here, they were like in Milwaukee and St. Louis. And her dad was moving here, the Sicilian side of the family, Russo's last name.
Okay.
And he told me this story. He goes, you know, he passed away some time ago, but he was 86 when he passed away. He lived a great life. He told me, you know, when I was moving out, I had this dream that we were going to move into this area in L.A., and my daughter was going to marry this man that had this big fish market, and I wasn't going to have to worry about her anymore. Are you kidding me?
Come on, that's too detailed.
And he told me this, and I said, Mom, did you know? He had that dream. And then so they moved into this house, right? They moved into this house in 14th Street, downtown San Pedro.
Wow.
And right across, the way this house is, where you walk along the sidewalk, and there's two stairs that go into each house.
Okay.
My mom's bedroom faced who would become my dad, you know? And they dated forever, because I know my dad's like, I don't want to get married. I don't know how many years they married. I mean, they're both passed away now, so they can't get mad at me for this. But they dated for a long time, eventually got married. And so he literally bought a house next door to the person he had a dream about. Isn't that crazy?
That's ridiculous and awesome.
And then, I'll give you one more. And so my poor grandmother, you know, my Nana, my mom's mom, she's a very nice lady, and she's in the house. And she's like, we acting like June Cleaver or whatever. And so my grandfather comes and knocks on the door on Garo's side.
Okay.
Hello? Hi, I live next door. Hide this under your bed and go for a walk. Don't open it.
Interesting.
Okay, well, my sister-in-law lives across the street. Not so she goes and gets lost. Because he was a bookie.
Wow.
He was under investigation, and I guess he figured out how to get out of it. I don't know. But you imagine moving in, and that's one of the first things that happens to you?
That's like Goodfellas.
I would have moved right out of there.
Yeah, right.
Instead, they got married. So
fourth generation.
The fourth generation, my kids, my daughter helps out a little bit. She's She's sort of my part-time executive assistant.
Okay.
My oldest daughter, it's middle daughter. My oldest daughter worked as a host during COVID, then moved to New York and now works for CAA. And she's like, wow. I learned enough being a customer service person in our restaurant during COVID to handle anything.
Okay. Okay.
My youngest is a professional dancer. I don't really see her getting involved. She's actually going to be at the Dancers for Cancer event at Beverly Hilton tonight. So okay. She's doing great. Okay. My nephews are half and half. Some of them work there and some of them are going to college.
Right.
You know, Henry's son, Dominic, is super involved in the restaurant. He's moved to because I don't really feel like going to college. So he worked his way through all the fishmonger. Now he's in the kitchen. He's learning every part of running the business.
That's good.
Tommy Jr.'s son, Andy, works with him. He's learning all the same stuff. So I think there's going to be this mix. I imagine what we're building will be more. What I'm building is I'm not building a restaurant. Empire. Yeah. I'm building a media empire.
Yes. Right? This was my second part of this question was going to be this segue.
To me, if you don't want to cut fish, you don't need to. We've got a series on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
We have a retail product line that we're relaunching into stores. We have content. We have an entire marketing.
Does that retail line include those hot sauces?
Yeah. So we're going to relaunch all that right
They're
now. They're
literally excellent. And the fish like specific one still to this day is my go-to for the fish.
My goal is to create as many opportunities for the family to come back and work, because that's how my grandfather looked at it. Because if you're having a hard time, the business should just be there to help you take and feed your family if you can't find a job, because they're from the Depression, you know. So I'm thinking we don't need to pigeonhole ourselves into the four walls of the restaurant. There's all these other things that we can do.
Yeah.
And we're showing now that those things can happen.
So I think that's a good segue, because you guys have seen how Michael's just very articulate, business-minded, and what I sort of envision, this is the truth, going down to the fish market, maybe I'm stereotyping, but I thought it'd be a guy who's been in gloves and boots and dealing with fish and kind of gruff, but Michael, you're educated, you're a visionary, you have an outlook, you could speak, the marketing kind of speaks for itself, and one of the interesting channels that you utilize, which I know people utilize, but when I see it otherwise, I'm like, this is so disingenuous, yeah. Pre-packaged, like part of my language, but bullshit. But you use LinkedIn as a great tool, and yet it humanizes you. Like LinkedIn itself can be this, oh, hoity-toity LinkedIn. But you have this thing where you're like cigars and, you know, maybe a cocktail or two, where you want to talk and meet with people. So tell me about this, how you utilize LinkedIn,
I have a question for you on that.
Yeah.
Do you ever just have an instinct that you're supposed to do something or something's supposed to happen? Or are you just like, you know what, I need to do this. I don't know why or how, but I just, my gut tells me that.
Some people call that a compulsion,
You know, I've had LinkedIn for over 20 years at least, right?
Okay.
I don't know what to do with it. Every time I go on there, someone's trying to sell me some shit I don't want.
There you go, right.
So I'm not paying much attention to it. And I met this guy I mentioned to you earlier named Sean from Cali BBQ Media,
okay.
And Cali Barbecue is his restaurant, and the media is his content creation thing. He comes to this event I have at a Long Beach restaurant. I start talking to him, and he goes, yeah, check me out on LinkedIn. I'm like, okay. So he starts telling me, you don't understand, LinkedIn is exploding right now. And I'm like, but what does that mean?
Yes,
so I'm watching him do this, and he's doing these things called, he calls them the Rising Tide LinkedIn Live, and it's all about digital hospitality.
Okay.
So it's restaurants in the digital space and digital hospitality. And one of the shows he's producing is a LinkedIn Live show. And I don't understand what it is. So it goes, it's at 10 o'clock. Anyone can join, by the way.
Right.
It's at 10 a.m. on Wednesdays and Fridays. I was on it on my way here today. So I'm like, oh, I'm in the car for traffic. I'll log in.
Wow.
And so it's audio only. There's no video. And the first 17 people can be on the stage, which means you can raise your hand and turn unmute and talk.
Right.
So he creates a subject. Today was setting realistic goals.
And people are tuning in via LinkedIn.
You have to do it through the app, and you got to do it through your phone, because I tried it on my computer, and it sucks, LinkedIn. Sucks.
Fix that.
So the phone, right? You get on your phone. It's just great. I'm in my car. I turn it on my phone. And he'll go around. You get 60 seconds. Tell us who you are, what you believe in, where you at right now. I'm on the freeway going to see you.
Yeah.
I'm telling them, well, we love that guy. You know, they're all fans, right?
Thanks, yeah.
And so it's people from all over the country, and actually people in England and Ireland and different countries talking about whatever the subject matter is. And I'm sitting there going, this is weird. They're super open and helping one another out. And that's not my experience in the restaurant industry.
Right.
People tend to be very guarded and not trusting.
Yeah.
And so I'm talking to him about this, and I realized I think COVID softened everybody up. because they realized we can't survive if we don't get help, which is a fundamental to humanity. You need help.
Very well said.
But people put their shield up and they don't, and they'll throw rocks at you before they'll accept the help.
So
he created this network of people that are like, no, I'm in. Tell me what I can do. And some of the times, what's your most vulnerable situation was one of them. Vulnerable situation? What's it like to be authentic? Today, one of them's got, I'm going to start a new one about being accountable. And I'm like, these are weird conversations for professionals that are not just restaurant owners. They're in the tech industry in restaurant, or they were former franchisees that created a technology to help restaurants. And I mean, there's some of them are coaches, and one lady just does gifts makes specialized gifts to help you market your business. And I'm listening to them talk about it. Hey, can I try and lead one? I want to lead one. I just did this talk on monopolies and auctions. I want to see if I can adapt it to this format.
Okay.
And it was awesome.
Yeah.
They go, here's what an auction, here's what a monopoly. You need a monopoly to produce a monopoly, and you do an auction, and that's how you create capital for your business. What does that mean to you? And then they went around to all 17 people and they shared what they thought.
Wow.
But there's no visual aid, so I don't know how it's going to go off. And then they had the whole Kings of Fish cast on.
Okay.
Because we've teamed up with him to help find sponsors. We're looking for corporate sponsors for season 2.
Listen to that. So, Kings of Fish, corporate sponsors. Season 2.
So,
you know who to reach out to.
So going back to your original question, it's like I'm watching all this happen, and you know, all our seating's outside. We had to move to another parking lot. It rained almost every weekend for the first quarter. So our sales numbers are through the freaking floor.
Yeah.
You know, we're like, we got to borrow money to make payroll.
The wrong kind of records.
No. Yeah, and we're like, how are we going to make payroll? We're way behind. We got to build this new restaurant. Now it's delayed 6 more months. So I'm in a bad mood about it. And I'm trying, and I'm pretty good at being optimistic. You know, my general stand in life is to look at the positive side of things, right?
Of course.
And I'm sitting there watching what he's doing on LinkedIn, and I'm smoking cigars way more than I should. And I go, you know what? I'm just going to turn on LinkedIn, and I'm going to ask people in this community that I've discovered how they're coping with this while I smoke a cigar. Yeah. And I was blown away by how many people chimed in.
Yeah.
And some of them are like, I've been a customer here since I was a little kid. I used to go with my parents.
Makes you approachable, LinkedIn. And humanized.
I was just being authentic.
Especially on that platform. Sorry, go ahead.
And so, because you're thinking these are salespeople that are just going to bullshit me. But no, all these people, I'm dealing with this. It's so great to see it. Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, okay, I stumbled onto something by accident. So I started doing more of them.
Yeah.
And now people are coming up to me going, I don't even smoke cigars and I want one just watching you. One of my guys was at the Long Beach Chamber of Commerce yesterday.
Yeah.
Some lady came up and found out I'm from San Pedro Fish and said, I love your CEO and his cigar thing. He's just so funny. I'm like, who? And so people are reaching out to me, and I haven't really, I haven't come up with a strategy to really push on this or do much with it, but I'm amazed at what I accidentally tapped into. So then we went to the restaurant show in Chicago with my buddy Albert, who I smoke probably more cigars with than anyone.
Okay.
And I'm like, Al, let's do a live one at the steakhouse. So we're outside and we go, I'm here, and I'm doing them like short 2 minutes ones, right? Like you would do for TikTok. I haven't even touched the TikTok. I'm just doing them. What I was amazed by is when I came up with the idea of calling it the Cigar Series, it was available on every platform.
Wow.
So I was able to register all of them.
Great name. Yeah.
And so I'm starting to think we have the Kings of Fish. It's doing well as far as we can tell, because we don't get metrics from Amazon except at the end of the quarter.
Oh, wow.
And you may not have noticed this.
You're like on pins.
Yeah. Well, you might not have noticed this, but we uploaded everything the way we were supposed to, and then it wasn't there. Like, wait, that's not what we uploaded. There's a missing episode. The subtitles aren't right. The closed captions are wrong. All the data is incorrect. So it took us about 6 weeks, probably, maybe 8, to get it all corrected. So we didn't turn on the marketing literally until 2 days ago.
Wow.
So from August 13th to wherever we are now in October, none of the marketing or PR was turned on until this week.
Holy cow.
So we're not sure, we're going to get a quarterly report that's going to have almost 2 months of nothing.
Yeah.
And we don't know how it's going to look.
Okay.
So in the meantime, I'm thinking fast forward. So I'm thinking, what can we spin off of the show?
Yeah.
You know, like behind the scenes stuff. Can the Cigar Series become a spinoff where we do like cigars and CEOs and we talk to people? Can it be a behind the scenes thing? What do people care about? How do we use it to build a brand? You know, I think there's a bunch of stuff. Like, I'm watching what you guys are doing, you know, like I'm always blown away. Like, I met you and then all I saw was this constant stream of content. And I'm like, I remember texting you a couple, are you sleeping? What's going on?
That's that compulsion. When you said that, I relate to that, because it's like, you know, something, and this isn't about me, but just motivates me where
it's like on your mind all the time.
I need to do this. Yeah. Like, I just have to. And I know there's other stuff and real life stuff and other obligations, but I'm like, no, something's driving you to get that done.
I had that about Kings of Fish. I have it about what we're doing right now on LinkedIn. Like, I just need to do this. And then I'm finding, like, I went the people that I've met and this there's just another thing that happened. We went to this show. It was like I'm totally drawing the blank on the name, but it was like it was in Las Vegas 2.5 years ago, and it was all about digital restaurant.
Okay.
So it was about third-party delivery for the most part.
Okay.
So I go, listen, we got to focus on this. It's COVID. So I'm going to bring this team. Everybody's going to go. You're going to sign up for. We're not going to talk to vendors at booths. We're right. going to go to the breakout sessions.
Yeah, and to
everyone's going to a different one. Take your notes.
Yes.
Take notes. I want them in a Google
shows,
Doc.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. I want everything you learned in a Google Doc. Oof. Handouts, everything, and we're going to figure out how to implement this. And I was blown away by what I was hearing and seeing, and the people, and they're all in this. Freaking LinkedIn group, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize it was, I tapped into the same thing twice. And I had this instinct, like, these are the people I need to be connecting with, because nothing wrong with the fish market family and everything, but there's, you're inside four walls, head down, butt up, working, scaling, cutting. And I'm like, no, I've been, worked in other places. I've done other things. I'm studying with people. I need to be outside networking and building the opportunities more.
Right.
And then, but I never brought the team. Like, my brother, my nephew, a couple other people, they all came back like, oh my God. And I go, yeah, this is what we're missing. You know, this is where we need to go. So this LinkedIn thing was kind of a natural progression for me. And right. then with the show, and the funny part was, this one girl, I don't want to embarrass her, so I won't say her name, but I was talking about how I'm disappointed that we didn't get our retail game in better line, like lined up before we launched the show.
Fair.
Like, I'm on Amazon here, but my Amazon store says sold out.
Right.
And it was mostly miscommunication, so I'll take ownership on it, but I think it's fixable. So she called me and she goes, you know, Amazon, actually, it's pretty simple. You can drop ship. All you have to do is upload your logo on Amazon,
right.
and they'll put it on anything and drop ship it for you.
Oh, wow.
And it's like takes seconds. So she called to talk to me about it, and she was very nervous. I think she's from Taiwan. And I thought maybe it's her accent, but she sounds nervous. And then halfway through, she was totally fine.
Yeah.
She goes, I'm sorry, I've never talked to a famous movie star before. I'm not, I am nobody. Nobody's even seen the show yet. But yeah. I realized like there's this preconception that you have the show, you have this, you have that. And that's there's an identity that I have to like diffuse because it's not who I am, yeah. you know?
But it is who you are because you're genuine and you're authentic.
Yeah, though. But I am. Like, I'm not in this. I'm not one of the, like, I listen to what my daughter deals with at CAA.
Yeah.
she's bulletproof for that, but.
That's a whole different world. Well, listen, like, we got to wrap up pretty soon, but listen, first of all, everybody watch Kings of Fish, Amazon Prime. Very important. We need to build those numbers. We want season 2, season 3,
please.
Season Infinity. But I want to bring it back home for a couple last questions.
Yes.
Sorry, guys. Especially about San Pedro. What does San Pedro mean to you? And what are your favorite things to do in San Pedro?
Oh, man. Okay, so that's San Pedro is, it's my origin story. It's my family. It's where we came from. It's where our dreams were built. When I think that, some of the first place that goes, Busy Bee Sandwiches, man.
Yes.
I don't know. Legendary. I mean, I love Ryan, and I mean, they actually live near me. The brothers.
Interesting.
Brian and Darren, yeah. And yeah. So I haven't had one in a while because I don't think I can handle it. But I gotta share it. The Belly Buster.
Listen, whenever I talk in San Pedro, my experience with San Pedro growing up was a singular experience. I went on a date with my high school sweetheart. Somebody along the way to my young ears was like, Port Sacal, is this romantic like place to go? And I was like, what's Port Sacal? And they're like, no, you're near the water. Yeah, and like, yeah. What is that, oil field? But it like lights up at night and it looks all like nice and romantic and stuff. And so I go down to Port Sacal. I was like, San Pedro, where even is this? This is so far. How is this still Los Angeles? And that was the extent, right? Until I started doing LA in a Minute. And then I realized San Pedro, again, we've already talked about Historic Little Italy, which I thought was just a cute little side note because LA has a Historic Little Italy, but the history, the Croatians, the Starkists, but Sunken City, the Korean Friendship Bell, the Port of Los Angeles, which is the economic hub of the United States, the Vincent Thomas Bridge, the most beautiful bridge. But everybody's like, but you got to talk about Busy Bee, and obviously San Pedro Fish Market, but everybody's like, you got to talk about Busy Bee Sandwiches,
isn't
too.
Isn't that crazy?
So I kept hearing it so much, and I'm like, all right, we got to go check this out.
You know, it's
out.
Lunchtime, and I'm hungry. It might be why, but I haven't been for a while. But that's like, you know, at one point I left.
Yeah.
And I created my own restaurant. It was failure. And I built a catering business out of it. And when I shut the restaurant down, I still had all these catering clients, but I didn't know how to fulfill the orders.
Yeah.
So I called the local restaurants, and Bisbee was one of them. I go, well, give me a price to feed 30 people sandwiches. And then I would just repackage it and sell it. And they were totally cool with it, you know. Yeah. Like, we did Fantastic Cafe, did my breakfast burritos, and I had the local Italian place, like John Bacacus over at Big Nick's. He would do my pasta stuff and Sereno's, and I had a whole package of menus, but I was buying them from all the local places because the food's awesome in Pedro.
Wow, yes,
but it really is awesome.
It is a community, and listen, every neighborhood, 573 neighborhoods in Los Angeles, every neighborhood has that pride. And it's culture, and it's food, and it's people. But San Pedro is like this fiercely, almost would call it independent. Territorial is the word.
Yeah. Wasn't it voted like the surliest town?
And I even get like stuck talking about San Pedro so much because we don't want people coming. So it's dude. Anyway, San Pedro is awesome. So all right, in conclusion, let's wrap this up. And with every episode, I always end with one thing to do in LA this week. That's frankly the favorite segment on Intermittent with Evan Lovett. So Michael Ungaro, the pride of San Pedro Fish Market CEO, Kings of Fish, Amazon Prime star/visionary. What is your one thing to do in LA this week?
I'll tell you, man. When my wife and I were dating and first got married, we lived in Redondo Beach.
Okay.
She was a teacher in Redondo Beach, and she's actually going to start teaching again this week where we live. But my friends, most Friday nights for happy hour, we'll meet in the Rivera Village.
Yeah.
Usually like Rebel Republic.
Yeah.
And it's a drive for me. It's about 45 minutes, but it's worth it, you know, because it's the best sunsets to me.
Yeah.
Because right on the beach, we lived right there. And then what I really like to do is you go to Old Tony's.
Okay.
You ever been?
No, but
Old Tony's has been around forever, and they have a drink called the Fire Chief.
Okay.
It's 151, like a Mai Tai.
Speaking
of
my
language. Just goes down easy, and you get to keep the glass.
Yeah.
My friend's got stacks of them at his house. And that's how you start the weekend, man. And they have a place called the Crow's Nest where it's right on the water. And when I was a kid, my dad would take us, not to Old Tony's, but there was a hot dog on the stick. Just closed.
Oh.
We went, this closed a few days ago. Okay. We would go because the fish market wasn't open, so we weren't working weekends.
Yeah.
We'd go play in the arcade. We'd get a cheese on the stick. We'd watch the water go. I mean, my memories of a child, there's just as many there in Redondo Beach in that area as there are in Pedro.
Wow, beautiful. And it's worth noting, Redondo Beach was where surfing was first brought to the United States mainland. George Freeth and Duke, I have a terrible pronunciation of the last name, but Hawaiian native. I don't want to botch it, but George Freeth and Duke were paid by Henry Huntington to surf along the coastline at Redondo Beach because it was such a novelty seeing somebody on a board riding the waves and controlling the ocean. And Henry Huntington was expanding Los Angeles, making it the mass transit capital of the world, by the way, in the 1910s and 1920s, by building his rail car routes out to these new communities in Redondo Beach. That's how he brought people out, but that's what brought surfing to the mainland. Became bigger with Gidget and all that. Muscle Beach. Got to circle back to hot dog on a stick. Hot dog on
a stick. Original location.
So
that's crazy. Right?
So that is your one thing to do in LA this week. And Michael Ungaro, thank you for being here. We appreciate it. Support San Pedro Fish Market. Support Kings of Fish on Amazon Prime. Anything else you want to promote?
Send people. Goldbelly. Go to goldbelly.com or you go to sanpedrofish.com. We ship our world famous shrimp trays anywhere in the country.
Wow. Shopify store as well.
Yep.
And thank you all for listening to this episode with Intermittent with Evan Lovett. Appreciate you listening. Appreciate you watching. And honestly, stay tuned. We got so much more in store, but this was a great episode. And Michael, thank you, man.
Yeah,
really appreciate you. All right, LA. It's been a minute.
From the trusted team behind 48 Hours, welcome to Case by Case, your weekly update on the biggest true crime stories unfolding right now.
Nick Reiner remains in custody without bail.
Luigi Mangione accused of stalking and gunning down United Healthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
From high-profile trials and stunning evidence to major breaks in cold cases, we'll follow it all case by case. Follow and listen to 48 Hours Case by Case wherever you get your podcasts.